Okay, I'm going to just introduce the program and Rabbi Gordimer just for 1 minute. We have a program at the OU that's called Ask OU. Ask OU stands for Advanced Seminars on Kashrus. And we have people literally from around the world. Last time we did this 2 summers ago, we had 4 Kol Yungalai from Yerushalayim, Ira Kodesh, who came specifically to the OU. Not that they were coming from Chasna and Agavurcha, but they mamish came, and we had people, we had the Rosh Yeshiva in Berlin, Germany, and all kinds of exotic places around the world, besides, of course, throughout North America, who come to the OU. And now, this new program that we have, as you see in the brochure, which I hope everybody got. Did anybody not get a brochure? It's called Ask Outreach. The idea is, as we're doing today, we're going into the yeshivas and into the kollelim to introduce them to various topics in kashrus. We're going to places that learn yoredeya, that learn for smicha or kollelim. We're having, if anybody's going to be in Lakewood this Moitzari Shabbos, Rav Belsky is going to be going to Lakewood with Rav Shimon Mendelwitz and Rav Avram Jurvel, who are expert menachrim, and we're going to have Shilas in Treifus and Nicker in Beis Medrash Gavo, and Rabbi Gissinger Shul this Moitzari Shabbos. Rabbi Gordimer is the OU's expert, one of the OU's experts on dairy. Every Rav, or as we call it in the OU, it's called the Rabbinic Coordinator, RC, but basically in terms of a Hechsher, it's like a Rav Hamachsher. He is over the Mashgichim that are in the field. So every RC has an area of expertise. And Rabbi Gordimer is an expert in dairy, not only in the Metzias, but he's an eminent Talmud Chacham. He just wrote he's written many articles, Kedusha Torah, on the Indian of dairy. And the OU puts out a kuntras twice a year, I believe it is, called Mesorah. And he just printed a Chedusha Torah on Dover HaMaimed, Benageya dairy issues. So I mentioned to Rabbi Gordimer that in the Daf Yomi yesterday, and the Ran quotes it today in the Daf Yomi, Koima de Chalba. We know way is Nesubi de Chalba, but the Lashon Nedarim is Koima de Chalba. And so it's apropos that Rabbi Gordimer will be speaking on dairy issues as pertaining to cheese and whey. And the brochures that you received, if you could fill them out to give us a sense of what Shiurim the Olam would want, what experts that we should bring down from the OU. We're just 25 minutes by bus, the M9 bus we discovered, goes door to door. So we're happy to, let's say once a month, we would be willing to bring any expert down that the Olam would like to hear about. And the way to let us know what you want is to check off the areas that you're interested. We'll see what most of the Olam wants. And then we're here to service you in the inyanim that you would like to know about. Without further ado, be covered for me to introduce Rabbi Avram Gordimer Shliker.
Thank you, Rabbi Grossman. Thank you very much. Tremendous, indescribable zechus for me, for the OU to be part of this program here in the Sifted Teretz Yerushalayim, the Evan Apina of Torah and Haroah in North America and far beyond, Yeshiva Shigo Michael Ohio. I was asked to speak about the actuality, Metzias, as we call it, pertaining to cheese making and whey production, and how that interacts with the sugyas of Gavina and the Pesachim, the sugyas and so forth, related to Gavina, related to whey and so forth. In order for us to discuss cheese and whey, we have to take a step back and begin with milk, because the structure and the components of milk are directly determinative as to the production of cheese and whey. For our purposes, milk has 3 basic primary components. There are many secondary components that are very important, but there are 3 primary components. The first component is called water, H2O. Scientifically, it's called the aqueous phase of milk, water. All of the proteins and fats and everything, all of the chemicals and enzymes contained in milk are all suspended. They're all floating in a solution of water, H2O, the aqueous phase of milk. The second primary component of milk is fat. All milk, the way that Hashem makes it, is full of tiny globules, tiny little bubbles of fat. This fat, unlike the fat that you would find in other solutions, if you were to take, say, a dropper and drop a bunch of little drops of fat, say a vegetable oil or shortening or something, into a container of water, all the fat would rise to the top and it would all join together. It would coalesce into one like puddle of fat on the top of the water. However, in the case of milk, this does not occur. These fat globules remain independent. They don't coalesce together. They remain throughout the milk, uniformly distributed. And the reason is, among the many niflos habori relating to milk, is that Hashem encased each fat globule with a membrane, with a covering, a very firm covering that surrounds every fat globule. And that way the fat globules do not coalesce together, but they stay separate in the milk. Maybe the reason Hashem did this is so that any sampling of milk, any milk that a person or an animal drinks, will be full of fat globules. For babies, whether human babies or animal babies, the fat is critical in the building of their bodies. So fat is dispersed throughout the milk in little globules. If one were to take all the fat and separate it away from the milk, that fat is called cream. Cream is the word used to describe the fat of milk. And if you buy skim milk, what's happened is that the milk, when it was full fat milk, it was regular milk in the factory, that milk went through a separator, which filters the cream, the fat from the milk. So therefore, cream is the fat of milk, and you're left with skim milk, with milk that has no fat. If you buy homogenized milk, what that process involves, homogenization, is the crushing of the fat globules, the breaking of their membranes, so that the fat will actually disperse as a fluid throughout the milk in a uniform, even way. Rather than there being little globules that gives a little bit of a rough, uneven texture to milk, the milk will have the fat globules broken and dispersed, at least temporarily, throughout the milk. That's what homogenization is. If one were to take cream, which again is the fat from milk, and one were to take it and again break the fat globules, break open their membranes, and concentrate the thickest, most dense part of that fat together, one has butter. Butter is a concentration of the thickest, most dense parts of fat from milk. Let's move to the third, and for our purpose, the most important of three main components of milk. And that is casein, C-A-S-E-I-N, casein. Casein is the predominant protein in milk. Similar to the case of fat globules, protein is not concentrated in any one part of the milk. It floats throughout the milk. It just exists in suspension throughout milk. The reason that this happens is that protein, if you want to think of it in a sociological manner, protein has a sociological conflict. On the one hand, casein protein in milk, the way that Hashem made it, it's hydrophobic, which means it has a fear, it has an aversion to being immersed in liquid. If given the choice, that is to say, all the casein protein in milk would separate as far away from the liquid milk as it can, and it would all gather together on the edge of the container of milk so that the casein is touching other casein and not touching milk. Casein is hydrophobic. It does not want to be in liquid. It wants to be away from liquid. That's the way Hashem made it, and we'll see why. It's for cheese-making purposes. On the other hand, there are two things preventing casein from separating away onto the side, the edge of the milk, all in one little clump. Two things preventing that, again, flows of bow rate, are number one, all casein particles in milk have a negative electric charge. The way that Hashem said of nature, casein micelles are called. Casein particles that float about the milk have a negative electric charge, and they repel each other. They will not bunch together. They cannot bunch together. It's like taking two magnets of the same quality and pushing together, they're going to repel. So casein micelles, casein particles in milk, repel each other. They can't gather together. Hashem did this, perhaps, similar to the case of fat, to make sure that if a person gets milk, that milk will be uniformly distributed with casein, which is a very important protein. On the other hand, there's another reason that casein cannot clump together, even though it would like to. Its nature is that it would like to clump together. It's scared, it doesn't like to be in the water. That is because all casein, even though the actual mamushus, the substance of casein, is a slick, rubbery, mushy type of texture, it's coated with a hairy covering. There's a hairy, like hairy type covering on every casing particle called kappa casing. Kappa casing covers every casing particle. So that's why even if you were to take casein milk and you're going to stir the milk around, and even if they were, the particles would not be negatively charged, casein particles cannot stick together. It's like taking balls of wet, fresh dough that you're going to use to make pizzas or some type of breads. Say they're wet and they're sticky. Naturally, if they touch each other, they will stick together. That's the natural texture of them. However, if you were to wrap these balls of dough, sounds disgusting, in coats of hair, they could not stick together. They would just bump off each other. They wouldn't stick. It wouldn't adhere at all. And that's the way it is that Hashem set up casein particles. The casein particles, the proteins, are covered with a hairy-like covering, kappa casein, and they cannot stick together on their own. Therefore, there's a very delicate balance. Casein wants to exit the milk. It wants to gather together and be together. And that's talking how you make cheese. Cheese is a bundle, is a mound, a mass of casein particles all put together. On the other hand, it can't happen on its own. It can't happen. There are two ways, though, that one can gather all the casein particles and milk together and make cheese. And these two ways reflect the idea of breaking the two barriers to the casein gathering together. Either one can acidify the milk, thereby neutralizing the negative charges on the casein particles, and therefore, even though the particles won't stick together, they still have a hairy covering, but at least you can gather them together, they won't move away. Or instead of neutralizing their negative electric charges, one can, through an enzyme, miraculously, one can suddenly strip off that outer coating, that hairy coating on casein particles, so that the inner gelatinous sticky coating is exposed, and they will, if they touch each other, they'll just stick together like bees to honey, or whatever the phrase is, like raw dough balls with nothing impeding. They'll just stick together.
Even though there's a negative electric charge.
Right. We'll get to that. Right. The reason is because the charge is going to be somewhat removed anytime you make cheese anyway. We'll get to that through the chemicals. But and this reflects the two types of cheeses. There are two basic types of cheeses, both halachically as well as lahavdil in the metzias. There's acid set cheese. An acid set cheese we call soft cheese, like farmer's cheese, cottage cheese, cream cheese. Cream cheese is the way we buy it. Parenthetically, you have to slice it with a knife, but it really naturally, without adding all the gums and stabilizers and hardeners, real cream cheese as it comes out of a cheese vat is more similar to cottage cheese. So these are acid-set soft cheeses. Cream cheese, cottage cheese, baker's cheese, farmer's cheese, things like that. And these cheeses are done through acid, through acidifying the milk so that the negative electric charges on the casein proteins are neutralized, and therefore the casein can be gathered together to make a cheese.
What means that the
neutralization
take place?
We'll get to that in a second. I'll get to that in a second. On the other hand, if one uses the rennet enzyme, which is an enzyme which naturally grows in the fourth stomach, the cava, or in English, the abomasum, it grows in the lining in the fourth stomach of mammals. If one were to take the rennet enzyme and put it into milk, that rennet enzyme miraculously strips off, like cleaves off, as a scientist, it cleaves off the outer coating, the kappa casein coating from casein, and exposes the inner texture of casein so that the casein can stick together. The way that acid set cheese is made, there are really many ways to do it, but to acidify the curd, to acidify the milk, which makes cheese curd. The most simple way to do it, the direct attack way to do it, and this is the case for fresh ricotta cheese as well as a few other types of cheeses, is to take an acid such as vinegar or lemon juice or other acids, hydrochloric acid, and dose the milk with the acid and just neutralize the entire milk environment, and therefore you'll have at the bottom of the on the bottom or the side of the milk vat, the cleat that holds the milk in the cheese factory, you'll have just a bunch of casein particles that now have gathered together. They don't stick together, but you can just shovel them out. Another way to do this is the more natural way, so to say, and this is the way that Rav Moshe Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal described Negros Moshe in terms of acid set cheese, which is it can happen on its own. Milk contains some secondary components, as I mentioned, very important ones, one of which is bacteria. Milk contains a lot of bacteria, and milk also contains lactose, which is milk sugar. What happens is, if left on its own long enough, especially in a warm environment, because the bacteria and all the motion will increase then. What happens is that the bacteria naturally in the milk will attack the sugar, the lactose in the milk, and convert that lactose into lactic acid. And that lactic acid will then acidify everything in the milk, including the casein, and therefore that's how cheese can be made. Today in cheese factories, very often, rather than waiting for acidification to occur on its own, very often companies will add their own bacteria to vats of milk to make cheese. That bacteria will itself directly attack the lactose, turn into lactic acid, and neutralize everything, and that's how you make cheese. That is one type of that is it's not used for this actually. It's a different application. On the other hand, to make rennet set cheese, the way traditionally it was done, and it's still actually done this way in mainland Europe, especially in France, it's done this way in Hungary, and many countries in Europe still done this way, to actually take part of the stomach of an animal, dry the stomach out, and that stomach is full of rennet enzymes, or the way it's done, the more sophisticated manner, instead of drying the stomach out and putting a little piece of that stomach, what they'll do is they'll dry the stomach out, and they'll grind up the stomach and extract the rennet from it. But the rennet, you can't just take rennet off. It's not like something that grows on the stomach you can just like cut off or just suction off. It's actually part of the stomach. That's the problem with it for cautious purposes. But either way, one takes that rennet, puts it in milk, and as I said, it will cleave off the kappa casein, the outer surface of the casein, and expose the inner gelatinous casein. And that's the reason that hard cheese actually has such a different texture than soft cheese, than acid set cheese. Because hard cheese, you're exposing the actual texture of the casein, the sticky, mushy, gelatinous texture, so it sticks together much better. If you just look at natural acid set cheese, you can pour it, it'll drip and so forth, unless you add a lot of artificial gums and stiffeners to it like they do in commercial plants. Otherwise, though, it'll just drip, because you have a bunch of casein particles that you're able to salvage and put together, but they're not attached at all. They have, a hairy coating keeping them separated, keeping them from sticking together. On the other hand, in the case of rennet, made cheese, rennet set cheese, hard cheese like mozzarella, provolone, Munster, cheddar, the cheeses that we typically call real cheese, the regular cheeses. Here, the gelatinous surfaces of the casein particles all stick together, and you have a real hefzer, a real object that you can hold, and it's not going to drip. And by the way, when casein does form into cheese, it takes with a lot of the fat. The fat in the milk is actually captured by the casein and brought together with the casein to make the cheese. In the case of rennet set cheese, it's very elaborate. What happens is that the casein particles, they make a whole matrix, a three-dimensional matrix, like a web. Imagine like a spider web, but a very intricate one in which the fat is entrapped in between the casein particles. It's an amazing structure. Again, the flow is sabor, everything is. Of course, there is some water that is going to be trapped in cheese, some of the water, but the casein molecules don't want the water, and the amount of water in that cheese is certainly not going to be so large. Now that you have this, hopefully, a basic understanding of cheese making and of the two basic types of cheese, you can perhaps turn to some of the halachic points. There is a machlokas of poskim whether or not isser gavinas akum of cheese made by milkerim by goyim, whether isser gavinas akum applies to soft cheese. On the one hand, the Chachmas Adam, the Aruch HaShulchan, and even the Yigur of Moshe himself, he was not permitted. Chachmas Adam and Aruch HaShulchan held that any cheese, hard cheese or soft cheese, is subject to the Isser of Gavinas Akum and cannot be permitted unless it's made by Yisrael, or with Yisrael's supervision. We'll get to that. But if any cheese is Gavinas Akum, if made by Machrim. The other hand, the Rav Moshe, even though he didn't endorse it, gave the rationale why there are others who say that soft cheese does not have a problem with gavinas akum, because soft cheese, acid set cheese, will form on its own. If left out, the acid, the bacteria, will acidify the milk, and it doesn't require any rennet, it will just happen on its own. And since, according to the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam, the whole gzeir of gavinas akum is because there's a possibility, a good likelihood, that not for making cheese would use the veil of rennet. Well, that doesn't apply to acid set cheese. It's a cheese that doesn't use any rennet. It doesn't require any ingredients. Just put a bowl of milk and leave it for a day or two and you've got cheese. And most of that's the reason that there would be no meat, no gzera for gavinas akum on acid set cheese, on soft cheese. Ramosha actually quotes the Gaonim who are matir it. He doesn't mention by name. Bergalski, though, told me that Rehenkem the Chathilu was matir
as it said, cheese, without being Yudinus Yisrael, without a Mashgiach being there for the cheese making. And there are other posts also in Lakrit as well. Policy is, the policy of the OU, as well as the OK and the Chavk and the other national Hashgachas, so to say, is to go the cooler. They do certify, saying, OK, Philadelphia cream cheese, OU certified Breakstone cottage cheese. These cheeses are asset set cheeses. There's a Mashiach Yotze Benechnas, but there's not a Mashiach there when the cheese is made per se. And we go by the opinion of Rav Henkin and the others who do permit this, who do permit asset set cheese without a Mashiach being there, without being a problem of giving a sakam.
What is cream cheese?
It's an acid set cheese. There are a lot of stiffeners added in, but it's a pure acid set cheese. There are some cheeses, by the way, there are most of us, I'll point this out again, some cheeses in which there are acid set cheeses, such as baker's cheese primarily, but they use a little bit of rennet. But the rennet that's used in them is not what makes the curd, not make the body of the cheese. The amount of rennet added is so minute. A normal vat of cheese requires about 100 milliliters of rennet. Not so much, but it's very, very potent stuff. However, only about one-tenth or so of the amount of rennet, maybe 10 milliliters is required to put in to some of these types of soft cheeses. The rennet just helps stiffening a little bit, but on its own it would just leave a total liquid vat of milk. It would not make hard cheese. It would not do anything. So that's the reason that the Moshe explains that soft cheeses, acid-set cheeses, such as cottage cheese, mentioned by name, which have a drop of rennet added as a stiffener, because that only will stiffen it slightly, it will maybe hasten the coagulation, hasten the formation of cheese, but it's not actually the thing making the texture. If by itself it couldn't do anything, most of that's not a problem, and that's also common policy. There aren't so many cheeses that use rennet. Actually, soft cheeses that use rennet, there are very few. There's baker's cheese does use it, and there are a few types of cottage cheese, harder ones to use it, but it's not so common, but even if it would be done, it's kosher rennet we're talking about, it still is not going to impact, going to the Rosh Yeshivah Zal, the status of the cheese being within a socket. We wouldn't have any problem with that.
Cream cheese is classified as a soft cheese.
That's right. Even though when you buy it, you cut it, that's because it's full of gums and full of stabilizers and things that make it hard so they can cut it and spread it nicely on a bagel, or you can buy it in the deli and buy the pound, but it's really a soft cheese. It's only artificially stiffened. The cheese-making process does not make a firm cheese, turn cream cheese. Let's talk now about whey. We talked about cheese. Let's talk about whey. Whey in the Gemara is referred to as Rishonim as Nasiba de Halba, as Rosa mentioned earlier, the Halba also. The idea of whey is very unusual. Very often, Mashgichim, and even the cheese companies as well that we deal with, some cheese companies, we have special Gevinas Israel productions. Sometimes they ask me, Rabbi, why is it that the whey, the halacha is, among almost all posting, is that whey from Gevinas Akum is permissible. It's kosher. It's not a problem with Gevinas Akum. The question is why? Why in the world should that be? If you make Gevinas Akum and whey is a byproduct of making that Gevinas Akum, why is that whey not trade? Should be giving a sakum as well. Why is that? It's a common question, and the answer is as follows. The answer actually is stated so beautifully by the Pri Chodesh. He says it's actually in Kufi Beis when he first brings up the Siva Dechalba. He mentions, and this is going to see, is the fact that whey is not a product of cheese. Whey is the part of milk that is left over when you make cheese. When you take the casein out of the milk and take the fat out of the milk, that becomes part of the cheese. The cake, the milk is stripped of its casein and its fat. The leftover watery stuff is whey. That's what whey is. Whey is the leftover, the solus, the remaining product left over from the original milk that did not become cheese. Whey is not a product of cheese. It's something is a product of milk. There's the remainder of the milk that did not turn into cheese. And that's the reason that whey in the Tshuvos is not, from Gevinas Akum, is not viewed as a problem. If you go through the Darchei Tshuva, for instance, he brings, and the Rosh Yeshivah also brings it, Sheva Levi brings it, there are those who object to the kashrus of whey in terms of not being Gevinas Akum, but if you look carefully, not even so carefully, just read it, if you can translate the words, they were talking about whey which was made with cheese that was cooked in a hot vat. There are certain types of cheeses, such as Swiss cheese, Parmesan cheese, sometimes provolone cheese, depending on who makes it, in which you don't just add the rennet to a vat of cheese, a warm vat, you had a very hot vat of cheese. This very hot vat of milk that turns into cheese. When you put rennet in this hot vat of milk that makes cheese, you may have blios of the Gevinas Akum, of the cheese curd, assuming that it's made not by Jews, they're not saying we'll go into the whey, because it's all one vat containing the cheese, the milk, the whey. Everything is taking place in one location. That's the only objection, look carefully, that poskim have to the kashrus of whey, to say it's not going to sakum. Very carefully, it's very clearly clear that's the situation. But the whey coming from cheese is not made as a hot cheese. Most cheeses are not made at a hot temperature. They might be warm, but not hot. That whey, there are no poskim, at least not in the standard literature. Sheva Levi, Igros Moshe, Rechei Chubuv must quote 30 or 40 shitas about this and so forth. Prefadish, you don't find any problems with this. And that's the reason why. That's why it's such a dover pushing. It seems like a kiff, but it's counterintuitive. But if you understand how cheese is made, it is really pushing. Why whey is not a problem per se. However, there are a few caveats to this. There's a sort of contemporary machlokus over whey in terms of two aspects. Number one is that there are some cheeses, as we mentioned, especially European cheeses, which actually use or hakeva, use the actual stomach lining of a non-kosher, an animal, non-kosher animal normally, to coagulate the cheese with rennet. That's one that's used. In America, take is sort of a little bit prevalent with organic cheese, or organic cheeses, due to the fact that it must be quote-unquote all-natural. Organic cheese companies do not allow kosher, artificial, or imitation or microbial rennet to be used. They require the real animal. Just like if you buy organic, say, strawberry milk, there's a very good chance that strawberry milk will become red due to carmine, which is an extract of beetles, because organic companies and certification agencies and customers don't want anything unnatural. They prefer the pure beetle extract to some type of imitation coloring. So, too, they don't want an imitation microbial rennet or genetically engineered kosher par rennet. They want the real rennet from the real calf, from the Orcavus novella. That's what they seek. So organic cheeses suffer from that problem. Nevertheless, though, the Sheva Levi says, you know, that if you have Orcavus novella, rennet from the Orcavus novella, from the stomach lining of the novella animal, making cheese, the whey will still be permissible. The reason he explains this, and it's CSY, not that he needs our haskam, but it is true, is a rennet, that trait for rennet is the imam in the cheese. It's not an ingredient to the whey. That is actually creating the cheese. The amount of rennet is bottled. It's tiny, tiny, but it's a minor. But it's minor the cheese. The whey is simply a portion of the milk that did not become cheese. It's really almost irrelevant, the local status of that rennet he holds for the whey. Only the cheese is very important. However, the Roshivas, Asar Moshe, did not accept that. In the he held that if you have... We'll go into a second in more detail, hopefully, but if you have four cavus available rennet, trace rennet from a trace animal, the real thing, Joy Lahila, let's say, if you get this edible trace rennet, he held at least in the second rationale of this issue that way. He explained, no, that's not permissible. He did not allow that. The OU, as well as most kosher agencies, at least in America, the main ones, hold the chumrah on both positions. That is, that we do not certify whey coming from hot cheeses, such as Swiss cheese and Parmesan cheese and so forth, because the position of the Sheva Levi holds there are glios and venus aquam into that whey. We only accept whey coming from mozzarella cheese and venus aquam, or from cheddar cheese. These cheeses are made at cooler temperatures. Cheddar is made at about 90, mozzarella is made at 107. Bouillade to lettuce corn to everybody. On the other hand, we also don't allow whey coming from real trefa rennets. Moshe Roshiva's Atzal explained, he's referring to his teshuva. He didn't seem to have a problem with a trefa rennet being used, because he was referring to rennet powder. Because rennet used to be a miyavish that they dried into powder, not roi l'achilas kelev, not roi for anything, it's just like grains of powder, and that would be used as a coagulant. That's why the Roshiva did not have a problem in practically allowing whey in which a non-kosher rennet was used. However, Bizman is that today, rennet is typically in the form of liquids and pastes. And it's not so clear that the rennet of our day, decades after this tshuva was written, might not be more of a problem. I don't know if that would apply, so to say. So regardless of that, the kosher agencies uniformly, at least in America, in Europe, there are those who do allow trade for rennet to be used, but in America, kosher agencies uniformly do not allow rennet, real rennet from novella, to be used in production of cheeses that were certifying their whey. There were two nachmanim also, according to Igros Moshe, that are very important to Maisa. Number one is that the manner in which some cheeses, notably mozzarella cheese and provolone cheese, are made is a little bit different. There's one extra step than the way the regular standard cheese, like cheddar cheese, are made. Mozzarella cheese, particularly, which accounts for 1/3 of cheese production in the U.S., mozzarella cheese is a very elastic, sticky texture. Unlike cheddar cheese, which if you melt on a piece of bread, it'll just run off the toast, run off the bread, it'll just become like fluid. Mozzarella cheese, as we know from pizza and other Italian foods, sticks together, has an elastic texture, sticks together. The reason for that is that after the mozzarella cheese is made, after it's totally made, it's removed from its vat, from its cheese vat, and put into another piece of equipment called the cheese cooker. And in the cheese cooker, the mozzarella cheese is bathed in scalding hot water, about 175 degrees for a while. And this cheese cooker has augers, has equipment which stretches and pushes and pulls and pushes and pulls the mozzarella cheese back and forth while it's in this near boiling water, while it's in very hot water. And this pushing and pulling and stretching makes the mozzarella cheese become elastic. It is an elastic texture. The problem is as follows. Many cheese companies, at least those that are not kosher certified, take the water from this mozzarella cooker, which has bleos, if not more, of Venus aquum of mozzarella cheese, and they take it and they use it as whey. They pour it into their whey tank. They use it as whey because it tastes like cheese, has a lot of the salt and tang from cheese. So they treat this water in these mozzarella cookers, and the provolone cheese is the same thing. They treat it as whey. Now, process-wise, this is a problem. It could very well be a problem. Because on the one hand, even though Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal permitted whey from hot cheese, and his reason he explains for that is that when Zal would not go there, Yisro Gevinas Akum on whey, they knew that the whey is being balei atam from Gevina. Nevertheless, they were not gozer. They said there's tam Gevina being blew into the whey. Whether it's hot or cold, they were not gozer. Even cold, it has a tam. They said they were not gozer on it, period. The whey is permissible, period. However, it seems from the tshuva that he was only saying this pertaining to whey, which arises when you make the cheese. Because as you make cheese, whey is created, or whey is left over, as we say scientifically, and that way they were not gozer on. However, as the Igros Moshe quotes, and it's from the Shulchan Aruch, Gevinas Akum, once it's made, once it's complete, once it's finished and take it out of the vat, it's Isser Gomer, and anything it has hot contact with, it will make non-kosher. And in this case, you have a cheese curd from a mozzarella vat or a provolone vat. It was taken out. It's fully nigmar. Many companies don't even do this. They don't even need to stretch the cheese and make it elastic. They sell it for other purposes. But those companies that want to sell it to pizza companies, they take it, they put it in the cooker after it's fully completed, and cook it. That water, according to Igros Moshe, according to the rationale I quoted, is very likely a kosher problem. So therefore, it's something to be very careful about. Even if one were to certify a cheese plant based upon Igros Moshe, you could only certify, say, Swiss cheese Swiss or Parmesan cheese whey, in which the vat is hot and there's bleos from the cheese into the whey in the vat. Once the cheese is completed, the cheese is a full cut of a mike or an oval, and you do put it somewhere else in water and cook it, according to your exposure, that water is very likely going to be non-kosher or cannot be accepted as kosher. There's one more point also, which is, as I mentioned, that the trade for rennet, the Moshe only permitted this. The second reason for permitting whey in general was because any bleos of Isser that might happen from the Venus Akum curd and achieve that into the whey, these bleos, he says, were during the time that the cheese was in the hands of Goyim, Nachram, which is Moshe held by Chol of Akum, Venus Akum. There's no Isser while the Chol of and Gevina are in the hands of the Goy. Therefore, whatever bleos would have happened from this cheese curd into the whey in the hot vat are not Isser, they're Heter. Because before it's called the Ad Yisrael, it's Heter Gomer. This cheese is Heter Gomer, and the whey is Heter Gomer, and the look, everything is fine. So that's that's the other rationale he has. And Moshe says this because he says, as long as the cheese is kosher and Heter Gomer, when you grab a bleos, it gives them to whey without a problem. Well, today, since there are cheeses that are made with real edible rennet paste and rennet liquid, it could be that would not apply to these cases. Let's go a little bit further. Not all the topics are involved, some are lighter, but we'll try to go through this.
Want to take some questions now?
Maybe we'll hold to the end if it's okay. But it's in mind, and we'll just make sure. Some of these issues later are going to throw back to the earlier issues. Okay. There is a very recent development in which one or two, really one kosher agency that I'm aware of, the OK, they certify actually real animal rennet from shkutos. They take animals that are shkutos, kosher animals, real shkita, whatever they have to do, malich and nik or whatever, and they take the or hakeva, stomach extract, and they use it and they sell it with glock kosher rennet, so to say, or whatever it's sells kosher rennet. And there are companies that use this. Organic companies that want to try to sell kosher organic cheese sometimes use this. Now, on the one hand, due to the fact that the rennet, being inflation, is going into milk, going into, on the one hand, it's not, the halakha is not a problem because the amount is so minuscule, so tiny, and there's no tam, you cannot taste the tam of the, I mean, you can try it, there's not, it's not this used, there's no tam basar, and it's not hot, therefore there's no problem with basar b'chol, but in theory, if you were to take, again, kosher rennet from an or keva shkuta and make a tiny amount, which all you need, and make a vat of cheese, that cheese would be milchig, not basar b'chalav. It's perfectly fine according to the Shulchan Aruch. However, there is a sheet in Tosfos, quoted in the Mar Makamos, Avodah Zarah, who says it's asur d'rabbanan, and the sheet of Rambam also seems to say it's prohibited even to do this, even though the cheese would be kosher. The Rambam says, Machalas Asuros, Perik Gimel, Perik Teslach, Tesnayim, he says it's also to be mamid with the or keva shchuta. You're not allowed to eat the or keva shchuta. And if you do it, you should test it, you should taste it and see if it has any tam of basar or not. But he says it's also to do it. He doesn't say you're allowed to do it, there's no tam, he says you can't do it. So that's the reason that one should perhaps question whether or not these flasher, husher, black husher rennets, even if might be proportioned, should be used. According to the Tosfos, it might be in the Sefer Rabbanan. According to the Rambam, you should not be using it. One should not be using it. If a goy is putting it in, then we have the shaila of the vatalosil of hafila, or something like that. Because we have a case in which the kosher agency is sort of directing or requiring that the goy wants to use the meat rennet, he must use this rennet. So it could be a question like that, like we have in general in kosher, in which if somebody is, if a company is being the vatal, putting something in that's not kosher, or here that it shouldn't be done, maybe. Even though it'll be bottle, do we say the kosher agency is somehow responsible for this ingredient being used? Because it's their requirement that it's being used in the first place, and they're condoning it. So that is a good question. We also have a call in halacha, the call of tamei eina omeid. Lemachlokis lemaisa, but however, the remoras matzer lechatchila to take milk that's not supervised, call of akum milk, as long as it was intended to be used for cheese. And to eat that cheese, assuming, I'm not talking about America in which we have a terrible of milk, we're talking about in a real place that has no heter for halvakum, there are more held from the Beit Tam that if cheese were milk were milked from an animal and used intended for cheese, there's no problem because milk from a non-kosher animal can't properly form cheese. And the same is true in the case of butter. Rama Paskins, the Lice, and the Shacharach Paskins as well, that butter, which is made from unsupervised milk, from halvakum, so to say, that butter, as long at least as there's no actual liquid milk residue, that butter will be kosher. It's chalav tamei eino omeid. Milk from non-kosher animals cannot form into butter, fat can't become butter, and its casein, the fat, can't become cheese. And even though not everyone agrees to these, the Bahram quotes Ka'onim, and there are those that came, although they're showing the dispute, the halacha, they say, zera for halakim, zera period, you can't get out of it. Unless the rationale, you have to understand why some rishonim say chalav tamei eino omeid, and therefore the cheese has no problem with the nisakim or the butter. And that's because every species of animal has a different ratio, a different distribution of casein and of fat in its milk. And since cheese is a network, at least hard cheese is a network, an intricate network, a web of casein particles and trapping fat, very elaborate. If the ratio of casein is not going to permit that, or if the fat will permit it, you're not going to be able to make cheese or butter. And that's really the rationale for it.
Now, since this holds up chemically, I mean, I know Chazal say it's chemically.
I did a little bit of research. I saw that there are those who tried making cheeses from camel milk. It's the only thing I could find. Pig milk, they can't milk pigs, apparently. This is very hard to do so, and the output is very little. What's happened is as follows. There are those who have succeeded in making what they call a camel cheese, or a camel-type cheese, but it's not a hard cheese. What it is actually is separating, like the soft cheese, separating somehow the casein particles of camel milk and just have them together like a soft cheese. It's very hard to do it. Apparently, most acids apparently won't do it, but there are some acids that can do something of this sort. So it's not a real cheese, certainly not a hard cheese. Nonetheless, though, you can somehow get the casein somehow or other out of camel milk. That has happened. But again, this is not something that can happen. If you were regular with the casein, it won't occur. If you add rennet to milk of non-pasture animals, it won't happen either. Either because the casein distribution is too large, too great, fat distribution ratios, or it simply just doesn't respond to rennet. There's no evidence either way scientifically. Apparently it's hard to milk a chazir. People don't milk them on farms. They milk chazir or milk for their piglets, but apparently though they don't have a reason for true that you can easily access them. They don't produce large amounts of milk, so practically it hasn't actually been tested to my knowledge. It's a good question.
So these artificial acids that are used, they managed to make this camel cheese, they use artificial acids to make it?
I don't remember. It was something that was very difficult to make, even a small amount of difficult.
From Chazal's statement, it seems like not at all. So here they managed to do it.
Well, it could be Chazal was speaking about real cheese, rennet cheese, typical hard cheese, which it can't do. Maybe that's what we're referring to. That might be a raya, the fact that the gzer was only, the yazak was only in the hard cheeses. Maybe that's what they're talking about, real hard cheeses. The other hand, though, since it can't be done easily, through great difficulty, trying different acids, most of which wouldn't work, could be that it means that under standard acid you'd have at home or in normal circumstances it can't work. I'm not really sure, to be honest. Let's try to do a little bit of talk about Gavinus Israel for a second. Talk about Gavinus Akum for enough. Let's talk about Gavinus Israel. So Machlokes Poskim as to what makes cheese kosher, Gavinus Israel. The Shach mentions, of course, that if a Jew owns the milk, milk is made in the house of a Jew, even by Shvachos, by maidservants, by somebody, or the Jew owns the milk in some other way, he has a kinyan in it. That would not be a problem of Gavinus Yisrael, the problem is of Gavinus Akum. However, in normal current technology, not all, but almost all cheese factories are not factories owned by Israeli, owned by Yidden, by Jews, they're owned by Nachman, by Goyim. And therefore, special production of Gavinus Yisrael must occur. And the Machlokes is how we do this. Going to the Ramah, the Jew has to watch, he has to observe the Gibin, observe the cheese making process. Just like Chazal or Gozer, that the Jew has to watch the Chaliva, watch the milking, to make sure that the milk is not halabakum, so too the Jew has to watch the cheese making, he has to supervise it, to make sure the cheese is not givinus akum, to make sure that no non-kosher rennets are being used. I mean, the Gemara Taka brings many different reasons for the gzera givinus akum. Some Rishonim don't quote the Malacha, but there are reasons, perhaps, machlikim panei b'shim chazir, lard is used to smear cheeses. In Europe, actually, fancy cheeses, some of them, I've seen them myself, have lard smeared on them, to smooth them out or whatever. That's one reason, because I'll give. I give another reason that cheese might be, have chomets, have vinegar, wine vinegar from Stam Yenam, for Yain Nesech, to be in their manufacture. So there are different reasons for Yisrael. Either way, according to Ramah, having the Jew there to supervise the cheese making eliminates any problems. Supervising a regular Mashgiach, everything is fine. However, the famous Shach disputes this Ramah, the Vilna Gaon, the Gra, hold this way as well. That no, the Israel must actually make the cheese. He must be the one who puts in the rennet to form the cheese. The Gro brings a raya from his Girsan and Tosefta, which compares cheese making to bread making. Just like in bread, you can't just have a Jew watch the bread. It's not pasisrael. Pasisrael is the Jew is making the bread. He's doing the lisha, doing the richa, doing the afia. So too, in the case of milk, in the case of becoming cheese, the Jew must put the rennet, the coagulant, into the cheese. That's where the Vilna Gaon, that's where the Gro held. This is the Shita advanced, most famously by the Shach. The Rambam, the Perush Mishnayos, says the Perush, the Vadadari, he says that Re'iyah is all you need, Re'iyah is what you need in order to make Gavinus Yisrael. However, if you look carefully at the Rambam in the Yalach HaZakeh, in the Mahalat Surah, in the third parak, he says that one who eats, that he has a ochel, Gavinas Hagoyim, Ocholav Shechalbuhu, Ocholav Shechalbuhu, Lo Ru'i Yisrael, or is a Lilka Makat Magat. A person eats cheese of goyim or drinks milk that was not watched, goyim was not supervised, the Jews did not see it, it's givinus akum. It's mashma from the Rambam that Re'iyah, supervising visually, and Mashiach being there, for cheese is not going to help. It's not going to help. He doesn't talk about Re'iyah. He only talks about Re'iyah by Chaliva. He's not discussing it at all in the case of the cheese making. And I saw afterwards, actually, that the Chazanish says this, And he says the Rambam and the Yad is holik on the Rambam and the Perisher Shnayim. He talks holds like the Shach. You have to have a Jew make the cheese. Look at the Tor. The Tor in Kuf Tesvav, in Erdeya, quotes the Rambam, same exact Lashon. If you want to make the Ziyuk, he would agree also you need to have the Jew there for the cheese making, like the Shach and the Bra. And the Shulchan Aruch, and the Chaver himself, he doesn't elaborate, but he simply says, then the Ramah throws in, if a Jew sees the Gibun, the cheese making, it's all right. So why didn't the Mechaber talk about reading either? You could be Medayik, possibly, but the Mechaber as well, that all these postmen, these Rishonim, the Rambam, the Torah, the Mechaber, they require actual Asiyah, like the Shach. Even though the Aruch HaShulchan said this is not the Halacha, and Rashi Moshe also said this is not the Halacha, we hold Nivriya. Nevertheless, though, there's more than enough basis to say that one could or should be machner to have the Jew put the rennet, kosher, artificial enzyme, into the milk to make cheese. And taka, this is what's done by kosher agencies. Not because of these rishonim, just because of the shach alone. The kosher agencies in America, at least the OU, and I believe the other ones as well, all require the Mashiach, of course, to be there to watch the cheese making. And while he's there, he puts the rennet into the cheese. This is not such an easy task, though. Even though a tiny amount of rennet is all you need to make cheese, not a tiny amount for the amount of milk you're making the cheese. Nevertheless, though, it's not as easy as it sounds. There are two types of cheese plants, old-fashioned ones and modern ones. Now, old-fashioned cheese plants, the rennet is put in manually. You have to walk, there's a little ladder, a little set of steps usually, or maybe it's a tall ladder, to the top of the cheese vat, or the cheese which holds the milk to turn into cheese. And the person making the cheese has to take a bucket of diluted rennet, carry it to the top of the ladder, and pour it in. Well, for Mashiach to do that, it's not always so easy. Usually it requires two non-Jewish workers to carry the rennet, usually two pails of rennet. So, or it requires, or they maybe hold a large pail together, but it's not so easy. And the companies that we deal with, Rebelsky said that it's an issue of Messiah, perhaps having the Jew and the non-Jewish worker hold the pail together to pour the rennet in, so therefore we require the Mashiach to either make two trips or take smaller pails. He pours all the rennet into the cheese vat. In a more modernized company, there's automatic dosing of rennet. The person in the control room or in front of the vat, depending upon the situation, presses some buttons on a keypad and has the rennet dosed into the cheese vat. It's much, much easier, much less exercise. But that's how it's done. The issue with the second type of situation with modernized cheese plants is that very often the way it's done is that, or the way it can be done, it is done very often, is that you program the cheese vat system to make cheese, and you don't have to do it every time. You do it one time, and the program will go on its own. You can program it to continue on its own automatically for the whole day, or for many days, or for many weeks even. This is done. There's something called rennet casing, which is the casing by itself, which you separate the rennet from milk, with no fat and no lactose. It's a different type of product used for imitation cheeses. And rennet casing normally is made for weeks on end, non-stop, and companies, if they're automated, just have the buttons pushed to program it, and it keeps going and going, and nobody touches it. And this is a kosher question. And there are some poskim who permit this. They say if the Mashiach is the one who programs the rennet system, that's fine, and it'll go on its own afterward. As long as it's not a goy, an Nachri doing it, it's fine. Because Minas Akum means that the Nachri has done it. If it happened without a Nachri, Matov Manoim, it's fine. There are others who say, this is the Oyu's position, Mashiach must program every single vat of cheese. Therefore, he cannot just, besides being there to observe it, he must actually be in the control room. He must be doing it every time on his own. I'd like to go back to one or two quick issues, and we'll hopefully conclude. Am I okay to address some time-wise?
Yeah, we're going to have 5-10 minutes.
Okay, I'll certainly fit in. We discussed earlier, just very briefly, about called Tame Eino Omeid. And Mahalacha, in terms of butter, and even in terms of cheese, there are many suffering. If you're doing it, that's fine. However, one should be careful, practically as a consumer, because today butter is not just made by taking fresh cream out of milk and just churning it. There are a lot of additives added to it. There might be other types of dairy powders added, there are dairy flavorings added, other ingredients. Therefore, butter is not pure butter. And there are post-game, and Rebelsky said this, that one cannot today, if one is Machan Chol Yisrael, at least, one cannot go ahead and buy regular butter, it's not Chol Yisrael, and say, Chol Tame Eino Omeid, and therefore it's the equivalent of Chol Yisrael. Butter has a lot of ingredients, things that are not a problem of being omeid or not omeid, and they're just added in to firm up the butter, to add flavor, add color, and therefore butter is an issue.
There are no byproducts with other ingredients?
Some of them are whey product, byproducts, some of them are, which themselves are a question. Some of them are Could be milk dried products as well.
He's saying even without that, he's saying even without that, it's just the fact that this thing's holding it together. Is that
right? Right. I thought it was the same way as holding it, it's to add or take away from the fat contents. The most important one is actually derived from whey. Rudelsky said not to it. It's itself a long conversation, but that's, I mean, I'll just leave it there. It's okay, that's one thing. Also, in terms of...
is that even triple A? Like they have,
yeah.
Even the best...
They can. They can have whey cream. They can have the triple A. They can have small amounts of whey cream, which is the fat coming from whey. But those who could say it's coming from whey, and therefore, monoshot. That's not an issue, but however... Not everyone apparently holds that way. You can come and eat any type of butter. On the other hand, we also discussed earlier, let me just go back to the Gemara for a second, the source. We discussed earlier the machlokas as to whether or not soft cheese is encumbered by the Isser of Vina Sakum or not. Now, there are rise in the Gemara both ways, actually. Because on the one hand, the Gemara of the Bazaar has Rechista. Rechista says, as I mentioned, that the reason for Vina Sakum, for the Isser, is the vinegar, chomets of goyim, if machrim is used, if you is used for cheese, and the only type of cheese that really uses vinegar is soft cheese. It's an acidulant. It acidifies the milk. Even though there are some cheeses that use a little bit of vinegar, like mozzarella cheese very often has vinegar in it, they do that to change the pH, but that's not the main ingredient. That's a dover tuffle, basically. And Rashi says the vinegar there is mami de gavino, mami de chalav. So that's a raya that even soft cheese seems to have a problem with Vina Sakum. On the other hand, the Gemara has Ravada Bar Abba, who says that the reason for Vina Sakum is that the Machlikin Paneh B'Shem Chazer, the Goyim use lard to coat their cheeses. A soft cheese doesn't have any panim, it doesn't have any surface to coat. It's basically, you can't put a coating on a real on cottage cheese. There's nothing to coat, it's not a smooth surface. That would be a raya, but the Gzer would maybe made only on hard cheese. There are rayas both directions. There are people who discuss this. I'll just finish with one thing, maybe I shouldn't discuss it, but I'm told Rosh Shiva, the Bava Shmita, the Hanukkah does not agree to this, and many don't agree to this, but there were more quotes of Chumrah of waiting 6 hours, or really waiting however many hours Germany is to wait, for Germany it's 3 hours, whatever it is, of waiting after having begun a kosher hard cheese, as if one has, before one has milk, meat, as if one is waiting for milk after having meat. So therefore, if one has given a kosher hard cheese, whatever that means, one cannot just have something par, wash his mouth out, wash his hands, and go have some steak. One would have to wait 6 hours for most of us to do that. It's a question as to what Pagina Kasha is exactly. The Shach and the Taz mentioned this is cheese, for our purposes, which is aged for 6 months. But among contemporary posting, the question is to what are we talking about? Because a lot of cheeses aren't aged 6 months. Some cheeses are aged longer, and they might have textures different than the cheeses with times in the poskim. So Rabbi Heinemann, who said that he heard this directly from Aaron Cutler's outsell, says that only cheeses that you can grate, cheeses that are so old and dried out, you can only grate them, you can't slice them, such as Parmesan cheese, which you can only grate, you can't slice Parmesan, and the grating cheese, it grates up, it's too dry and aged. Only cheeses such as that, which can't be cut, are Gavina Kasha, and one must wait 6 hours afterwards. On the other hand, I asked Rabelski about this, and he holds very differently. He says that cheeses which were not even aged for 6 months, cheeses that are so we call fresh cheeses, but whose aging has either made the texture very different than non-aged cheese, or even if the flavor of the cheese is very potent due to the aging process. It has a very potent flavor. Belsky says it can be aged 4 months, 5 months, if the flavor is very potent, or if its texture is a very firm texture because of the aging, unusually firm, that would require waiting afterwards. I also said this because we know there are two reasons quoted in the Mishnah, the Rashi and the Rambam, as to why one must wait after having meat before having milk. Either because it's Bein HaShinayim, because you've had Basar HaShinayim, that pieces of meat that stick in the teeth, or according to Rashi, the shumen, the fattiness of the meat, has an aftertaste, a long-lasting flavor in the person's mouth. So I also said if either of these apply to aged cheese, you'd have to wait. Practically, I don't know if most people have spoken to Belsky are aware of this sheet on this, but that is a sheet. I'll conclude with this, and this is what I refer to as perhaps something that I maybe shouldn't be mentioning in this audience, but I'll say it anyway. Anyway, there's a sheet of the Yad Yehuda, and no one beforehand says this, and I believe that's the reason Rosh Shiva of Dabar Shlita does not endorse this. He says that hard cheese, which definitely is hard cheese, you have to wait for it, say Parmesan cheese, but has been melted, if it's been melted, you don't have to wait. Treat it like regular milking food, because the melting has taken away from the aged qualities of the cheese's texture. The cheese actually is not, it's no longer unique in terms of its texture, and its flavor also is not going to be the same as well. American cheese, which is made out of cheddar cheese and other additives that are just melted down and reformed, will be a prime example of this. But the Adi-Rashita, which is the one that's not late, is highly disputed, and one should ask his local post team, and Baruch Hashem, you have a great one here. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Where does yogurt fit into skiyot things?
Okay, there's a rabbis who says that yogurt has a halacha of soft cheese, and therefore, if you say the soft cheese is giving a sakum, you'd have to wait, then you would not have yogurt if the yogurt was made by a mashkiach, or like the Rama says, but it is machlokes. Many don't hold that way, but nevertheless, though, there is an opinion, it's a minority opinion of the rabbis, that yogurt would be giving a sakum actually.
Would be giving a sakum?
Yep.
Why?
Because in yogurt, you have cultures that create, that form the yogurt curd and leave a little bit of yogurt away. It's not a classical cheese formation, but nevertheless, though, because of the fact that you do have cultures that create a hefza out of the milk into yogurt, the Vada says this is enough to be called cheese, soft cheese. And then,
but there are yesh material on the yogurt.
Yeah, most do not hold that way. It's a unique sheet.
How about whey-based nutritional supplements?
Oh, thank you. I forgot to mention that. Thank you. Okay, so my focus post him, Mahoj Shonim, really, whether or not whey is milchig's chalav deraisa or derabanan. And Mar says if a person mevasha with mei chalav, which refers to as whey, ain't a loka. There's no malchus, and they explain it's derabanan. Mahlokus, though, seems to be Tosfos, the Bazaar, versus the Rush, and the Beis Yosef quotes the Rush, and the Torah quotes the Rush, and the Beis Yosef also, which is that whey is only. The only time that whey is whey derabanan is after the protein has been removed from the whey. All you have left is basically, whey has very little fat, all you have just left is like wastewater basically. That water is called permeate. That permeate, which has no whey protein was removed from, that is derabanan. But otherwise, the whey with the protein in it, or whey protein, is deraisa. Tosa seems to say that the whole thing is derabanan. Nevertheless, but if you were to buy a whey protein enriched food, that would, according to everybody, that would, sorry, according to the Torah, the Rush, and they said so that would be the rice, and certainly shouldn't have hashgacha on it, because unless one wants to make a lot of assumptions, unless one wants to assume within one position of the Igros motion, assume something that he might not even agree to, and will be very hard pressed to permit way without hashgacha to them.
You mentioned that in making the gavin, the
kosher,
you know, the shmer afterwards. So he's saying, so Yisrael has to be remitri on soil, not only putting in the rent. I mean, there's that. So, what happens there? How long does it take to make?
Oh, here's what happens. Great question.
And what's the?
Great question. What happens as follows? Great question. Happens that once cheese has been formed, before the cheese is cut, the cheese is left to age. Some companies age the cheese in baskets. In France, they have certain caves they age certain types of cheeses from in certain towns. Age all different environments. But what happens is that in kosher cheese making, the cheese is fully sealed off by the mashgiach with his simanim. Then before it's cut, he has to come back and supervise the cutting. Nobody can physically have any access to that cheese without the mashgiach being there to supervise. And that's a great question. That's how it's done. That's how it's done with kosher cheese making.
Not according to the idea, it does, according to the Rishiyot. Mm-hmm. So American cheese, which you said has cheddar in it.
Mostly cheddar.
So then is cheddar considered an aged cheese?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends upon, again, who you ask and how you
apply it. According to Rebelski, if you want that for that.
According to Rebelski, there is aged cheddar and fresh cheddar. So this is cheddar, American cheese normally is made. I don't deal with it in Costco, so really do not, so I plead the fifth, but cheddar cheese, American cheese, almost definitely, from what I understand, should be made out of fresh cheddar, which is not aged cheddar. So one probably wouldn't have to wait until the facility.
There's a chance that one may have to wait 6 hours after American cheese, according to those sheets. I mean, if we go to Chumrah and all that, but
there certainly is a chance. I doubt it's the case, but it's made out of cheaper cheddar. Or cheaper cheddar is not aged. As soon as it hardens, it goes right to processing. It is usually for cheese powders and probably also for American cheese. I would believe so. I mean, good aged cheddar, I believe, is normally sold. Again, I'm not positive, but I can look it up.
And also the powdered milk.
Powdered milk.
And the Rebbe says that they can't come 12 minutes because of the
I think it was a cheap piece of France that maybe Rashid also couldn't come from Halbentayat. I'm not to be honest, again, I feel this, I'm not familiar with that. But milk powder today that you buy is the stores were industrially used, and it's more common industrially to use milk powder than it is as a consumer, even though it exists in both spheres. There's regular cow milk, and the vast majority of it is spray-dried into milk powder on equipment that's totally dedicated for that purpose. It should have hashgacha on it, kosher symbol, because sometimes companies spray-dry milk into powder. They also spray-dry all types of things, cheeses and chicken broths and stuff like that. But most of it's not the majority of cases. But again, I'm not in terms of the that's a sheet of it. It's not so commonly quoted, but there is certainly that sheet, at least the harshi does exist. The chazan shem
speaks.
There are
those that are not in the cholesterol and not for milk powder. Right.
Based on the harshi, right? The chazan shem I believe does speak that. Your day, Christoph.
Shkoyah for Rabbi Gordimer. I think we all saw that Rabbi Gordimer is an expert in Messias and Halacha, and we give him a big up Shkoyah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And if you want to send me